You're listening to a Peak Media production.
And now, coming to you from the Windy City, it's The Daily Dime with your host, Tim Keller.
Welcome everyone to this latest edition of The Daily Dime. Today is March 8th. And we have a little bit of a different episode today, obviously being on the weekend. And today's going to be a little bit of a longer format than typical, mainly because there's been a lot of narratives in the media recently about the GOAT debate and LeBron and Bronny. And I just kind of wanted to give my thoughts on it. And it's going to take longer than 10 minutes. So first of all, I wanted to preface it with, I think this debate is kind of dumb. I kind of agree with what Charles said the other night where he was saying, you know, it's kind of like the easiest form of sports talk, and I tend to agree. So I wanted to talk about it once today, really go through everything in detail, and then hopefully not really have to rehash it too many more times in the future. And part of it, you know, is because I don't like these debates because I think they have devolved into what we currently see on all the shows, on all the big networks, to where it's just kind of these like hypothetical questions that don't really add any value to anything. They've completely abandoned all analysis and really any of the journalism that goes along with what those shows should be. And so I don't like where this has ended up, but for this specific debate, I figured we could address it today. And I also, because part of it is really frustrating too, that this is where these sports talk shows have ended up. They have a lot of great talent, whether it's the host like Greeny or Stephen A. And then they have a lot of great former players that can break down the game and actually give us a true analysis. I know one of the guys mentioned this week was Kendrick Perkins and a lot of other guys like him as well that I think could give us, they have a lot to add, I think, that would be fantastic to talk through, but they don't really get to. They just kind of parade them out there like clowns to scream about something for their 15 minutes or whatever it is, and then they go on with their day. So I wish we could get back to a little bit more analysis, back to a little bit more journalism, but we're going to play into it today. So anyway, you know, I think this is what LeBron was talking about the other day as well when he said, basically, why would you want to be the face of the league anymore? Because all it does is get basically constantly shit on all the time. And, you know, it's at the point where it feels like unless if your favorite player or your favorite team is perfect or they win a championship, then it was a complete failure. Like you couldn't, then you shouldn't have had any fun watching it. And it's a complete blemish on their resumes, on their, you know, whatever, all their career accomplishments. It's a failure. And it feels like we're at this point where you could shoot like 95% in a game. Like I think you could go 19 for 20. And if you missed a game winner at the buzzer, then they would still find a way to criticize you the next day. It's insane. So anyway, you know, back to the actual debate itself. This topic has kind of been brought up recently because LeBron is playing so well right now. He's basically playing at an MVP level in year 22, which is just crazy to think about. So you're starting to hear a lot more about it the past couple weeks. And again, I think the debate is also dumb for some other reasons. One, that I think we should really be comparing players within their own era. So, you know, like LeBron has been the best in his era. Jordan was the best in his era. Name your other player, Wilt or Magic and Bird or the Big O, anybody. You have to compare them to their peers because the game has changed so much. The rules change. And just like the, you know, kind of the upbringings around the sport, like it's a lot more intense now than it was 40 years ago with the nutrition and the training and, you know, all the big circuits and everything. It's just not the same. And trying to compare guys like Steph Curry today to guys like Bob Cousy is just not really fair. Like, I don't know if Bob Cousy could even play in the NBA today, but in his time, he was fantastic and he should get his flowers for that. So again, the debate is kind of dumb. And even kind of buying into that, it seems like in every other sport, we understand that like the game has evolved, the game has changed, except for basketball. Like you'll hear guys talk about like the 72 Dolphins and how their average offensive line size was like 6'2", 250, I think. And when you look at like the Eagles this year, they were like averaging 6'6", 340, like 100 pounds difference. And so could the 72 Dolphins even win a game in today's NFL? Like I would probably bet not. But everyone seems to kind of understand that, but they don't get it in basketball. They don't understand how much more athletic and faster and bigger these guys are. And it just, that's weird to me. Like, acting like LeBron couldn't play in the 90s is insane. And I sometimes wonder if, like, Jordan would be, like, essentially like DeMar DeRozan today, like, great player, but I don't know if he'd be dominating the league like he was 25, 30, 35 years ago. So anyway, you know, I kind of wanted to get into each argument that you hear today, because I think LeBron is the best player of all time, and I don't think it's frankly that close, but I wanted to hit on each point and kind of break them down. So it's going to be a little bit long-winded, but if you just bear with me, we'll get there eventually. So the first one that you always hear is the 6-0 in the finals argument. Like, he was perfect, 6-0, six finals MVPs. It's the main argument that you hear. But one, I think it's already a flawed argument to begin with, because it's literally a team sport and it's a team accomplishment. And, you know, I know in basketball you can influence the game a little bit more than in football or baseball or hockey or soccer. But there's still nine other players on the floor at any time, and acting like they're not as important or don't like contribute is just disingenuous. And the Bulls had really, really good teams. And so their team awards, and Bill Russell had almost twice as many rings as Jordan did. So if it's a rings argument, then Russell has to be your GOAT, if that's what you're going to mainly base everything on. But I kind of wanted to walk through each of those each finals appearance for each player relatively quickly here, just to, you know, like, kind of get really into the nitty gritty and see, like, should they have won? Shouldn't they have won? You know, let's look at some of the details here. So, you know, especially when you look at Jordan, his first finals appearance, you know, in year seven, just like LeBron. But the East was also a little bit weaker early on, which people forget. And it was a little bit more top heavy, but it wasn't as deep. There was only six teams over 500 in their first championship run. So they finally get past Detroit, but the East wasn't that good. And they get to face an aging Lakers team. It was like essentially Magic's last real season. James Worthy was getting older. Again, the East wasn't that great. And then you get to face, you know, an aging team in the finals, and you should have won. And people also forget, like, there were only 23 teams in the league when Jordan joined. So it wasn't as deep as it is now. Like, every team has like two or three really, really great players. That wasn't the case back then. You were like lucky if you had two, and there weren't as many teams either, which also plays a factor into this. So then the next year they play Portland, basically Clyde Drexler, you know, against this loaded Bulls team. And then the following year is when you have the Phoenix Finals, and it's basically just Barkley against the loaded Bulls team. So they should have won all three of those championships, like old Lakers team, just Clyde, just Barkley. I know there were other players that were good, but like compared to that Bulls team, they should have won, and they did. So, like, you know, they did what they needed to do. They get their props for that. When you look at their second three-peat, that's when the team was really, really good, when they had signed Steve Kerr, they signed Harper, and then you play the Sonics, and yeah, you had Gary Payton and Sean Kemp, but still not a great team overall. You know, good but not great, and they win. They win in six games, and then they beat Utah in back-to-back years, which, you know, again, had two great players, but not as deep as that Bulls team. And I think people forget, like, Jordan gets all the credit here, but that team was so loaded. Like, they also obviously had Rodman and Pippen, who, that 72 and 10 season, both of them got MVP and Defensive Player of the Year votes. So they had three players on their team get MVP and Defensive Player of the Year votes. And then they had two candidates for Sixth Man of the Year with Kukoc and Steve Kerr. So you have this team where, like, all we really talk about now is Jordan, but you had Pippen, who was first team All-NBA and second best player in the league in a lot of people's eyes. And then you had, like, the best rebounder, the best defender, the best three-point shooter, and the sixth man of the year all on the same team. When the league is not that deep and you're playing, like, subpar competition in the finals, you should go 6-0. And then when you chuck up, you know, whatever, 150 shots that he took in each series, you're going to win finals MVP because you're scoring 30 points a game. So, you know, it's not really a surprise that they went 6-0. It's not really a surprise that he got six finals MVPs. But we also don't hold the years that he didn't get to the finals against him like we do with LeBron's finals losses. Like, regardless, you still did not win the championship your first, whatever it was, 6 years. And you didn't win, you know, when he came back from retirement. And then he didn't make the playoffs with the Wizards. And for some reason, we don't hold those against him like we do LeBron's finals losses. It's way more impressive to get to the finals compared to losing in the first round. And we've completely lost focus of what's important there, or what's actually more impressive. And we even started to do that with Mahomes this year. Like, the Chiefs win more games this year than 99% of teams in NFL history. They are runners up. You know, they lose the Super Bowl. They are second out of 32 teams. And we're going to act like this is a blemish on Patrick Mahomes' resume. It's insane. Like, it's absolutely insane. And it's because of this LeBron discussion, because of the bias around Jordan. And this is where everything has devolved into these, like I was saying earlier, with the networks and everything. So you can't assume a finals loss is worse than a first round loss. And Jordan had plenty. So that's why I don't like this argument either. But let's walk through LeBron's finals appearances too and some of those losses and see, you know, see why they lost. You know, the first one, he drags this team, they're a 66 win team, to the finals, but they won 66 games because of LeBron. Like, he was the MVP, but not a lot had changed in terms of like bringing on anybody dynamic from the 17 win team before he was there. And you're in the finals with Mo Williams, Zydrunas Ilgauskas, and Delonte West, essentially. And you're playing the Spurs, who have three Hall of Famers in their prime. Like, you're not going to win, and they got swept. But to hold that against LeBron as a blemish on his resume because it's a finals loss is insane. Like, he had to also get through a very, very tough Detroit team where he had like the 48 special, scored 25 straight. And for that to be, you know, a negative on his resume is crazy. Getting that team to win 66 games with like Zydrunas Ilgauskas or Mo Williams as your second best player and then making it to the finals is crazy. It's incredibly impressive, and that should be a positive, not a negative. And then he goes to the Heat. Eventually, they lose to Dallas. Now, that is the one blemish on his resume for sure. He had the 8-point game. He only averaged like 18-7-7 across the series, which is, you know, good for most players, but not LeBron in the finals. So, yeah, that's his one blemish. You can hold that against him. But then they win back-to-back championships, and they lose to the Spurs again, which had, you know, their same three Hall of Famers, plus Kawhi Leonard, plus Danny Green and Patty Mills. Like, it was a great team. Probably more of a toss-up. You can argue they should have won, but we kind of knew that Heat dynasty was, you know, kind of taking a step back. And the Spurs, you know, had gotten young along with their veteran Hall of Famers. They were just, you know, another buzzsaw. So it's hard to hold that against them. That team was way better than any team that the Bulls ever played in the finals. And then he goes to Cleveland. And in 2015, they should have won. And if Kelly Olynyk doesn't rip Kevin Love's shoulder out of his socket, you know, earlier in the playoffs, and then if Kyrie doesn't get hurt in game one, I think they blow the Warriors out of the water in the finals. But then you have a team very similar to the team in 2007, maybe even worse, where your second best player is like Tristan Thompson or maybe Mozgov, maybe even Dellavedova. But that was a rough team in the finals playing, you know, the beginning of the Warriors dynasty. And LeBron still got it to six games. I think he averaged like 36 points a game, almost a triple-double. I think it was 36, 13, and 9 in that series. Pushed it to six games, and he probably should have got finals MVP even in the loss, but they gave it to Iguodala. They knew that he had so profoundly outplayed Steph and Klay and Draymond and anyone else, you know, Livingston, anyone else that was, you know, notable on that team. They couldn't really give any of them the MVP. They had to give it to Iguodala because he was the main defender on him. And even though he played well, LeBron was still putting up 36, 13, and 9. And so that's why he gets finals MVP. But again, you can't hold that loss against him. He was playing with Delly as the second best player, averaging like 2.5 points a game in that series. So anyway, I don't think you can hold that one against him. And then they win in 2016 in one of the greatest championships that we've ever seen, with that 3-1 comeback where he was obviously incredible. And then what do the Warriors do? They go and add Kevin Durant to the best team we've ever seen in the regular season, who was arguably the best player in the league at that time. And no one was going to beat them. I will put any team in the history of the NBA up against the 2017 and 2018 Warriors. Nobody was going to beat them. So they lose in 2017. 2018 is when Kyrie requested the trade, so the team kind of falls apart. They didn't really get, you know, the compensation that they should have from that. And so so they lose both those finals, but LeBron averaged in 2017, he averaged like 33, 12, and 10. Like, he averaged a triple-double, and then he averaged like 34 and I think like 9 and 10 the following year. Like, he was basically averaging like a 33-point triple-double over those 2 years, and they lost. And I don't know how you hold that against him. You know, he was the leading force on that team that, you know, in his eighth straight finals appearance. You talk about just the amount of games and everything, you know, basically having no offseason for 8+ years, just crazy, crazy dominant. And I don't know how you hold those losses against him. And then they win the bubble championship for his fourth one. So he has four. He has the six losses, and you probably shouldn't have won in 2016. You probably should have won in 2011, whatever that year was, against Dallas. And so, you know, your expected championships was probably 4-6. They were the underdogs, you know, most of the time, especially the later Warrior series, especially the final three. Maybe the first one was more of a toss-up, especially the first Spurs series in 07. Like, they had no chance of winning those. So I don't know how you hold those against him when you're looking at, you know, the championship argument here. But then the second one that you'll hear is like, it's a different era. It's a more physical era in the 90s. LeBron couldn't have played in the 90s, which is also just insane to me. Like, first of all, just go watch the games. Like, they're out there. You can find them on YouTube. Go watch the games and tell me how it's more physical today. Like, yeah, there were a couple hard fouls in like the Bad Boy Pistons series, but watching the game as a whole, it's like, it's very slow paced. A lot of the times they're giving Jordan space to even like shoot because they just don't want him to drive because he was so effective at getting to the rim, which you would just never see because everyone can shoot now, like nowadays. And they'll talk about like hand checking and stuff, but that still happens today, even though it's like technically not allowed. Just watch, again, watch the games and just watch how like beat up LeBron gets. Like, there's like the famous picture of like Paul Pierce, like trying to drag him down. And a couple other times, I think there was some players in one of the Raptors series where like, he's just dominating them and they're trying to literally just like tackle him pretty much to just keep him from getting an open layup. And he still scores. To act like he wouldn't have been able to handle the 90s where the guys were way slower and less athletic and anything is just an absolute sham. And acting like Jordan would be as athletic as the guys are today, I think, is also crazy. Saying, you know, you'll hear these guys say, oh, he would average 50 in today's game because he'd have more space and no hand checking. There's just no way. I think he'd be lucky to average 25. I literally think he'd be like DeMar DeRozan, maybe even not as good. But anyway, that's just my opinion. But I don't think you can talk about the physicality as a negative towards LeBron here. He's literally bigger, stronger, faster, and can jump higher. Like, he would have been fine. He would have scored 50 in the 90s or the 80s. But anyway, the next argument that you hear is the super teams. LeBron had to create a super team. He had to leave Cleveland, whatever. One, we already had like super teams. Like, if you don't want to count like the Lakers or like the Pistons teams, not that they were a little bit more organic, but if you don't want to count those, like Boston was for sure a super team and they had to assemble to beat LeBron when it was pretty much only him, you know, him and a 37-year-old Shaq or a 33-year-old Antoine Jameson. That's what they needed to beat him. So anyway, you already had super teams, but you know, they'll say, oh, well, look, you know, Jordan didn't have to leave Chicago. He didn't have to go build something else. Well, it's because the Bulls were able to build organically around him. Part of that was, again, the league not as deep, not as many teams, and they just had more assets and they were picking higher in the draft every year. And, you know, when you look, after his rookie year, they draft Keith Lee, who they're able to trade for Charles Oakley. So they immediately have, you know, an effective player right from the rip. And then they draft Brad Sellers. He's kind of irrelevant. But then they get Polinice, who they immediately trade for Scottie Pippen. And then they get Horace Grant in that same draft. These are all like top 11 picks. And so they were just able to build, like, immediately they have a team of stars, essentially, you know, 4 years in to Jordan's career. And I don't think what people realize either is those first 3 years, they were making the playoffs, but they weren't even a 500 team. They were, I want to say, 108 and 138 in the regular season in his first three seasons, but they still made the playoffs. And just because, again, the East was pretty weak and there weren't that many teams. And so they were still picking relatively high, even though they were making the playoffs and getting bounced in the first round, which nobody wants to talk about. But then after that, they draft Will Perdue, which they end up getting Rodman from that trade. And then the following draft, they get Stacey King and BJ Armstrong. And again, these are all like top 10 picks. And then the one that was finally later, they're picking at 29 and Tony Kukoc falls to them. So you have this loaded team that Jordan didn't have to do anything for. Like, they were able to pick high, use their assets, had multiple picks in these drafts or made good trades. And suddenly you have a team of all-stars around him. And then they start winning their championships. And then after the first three-peat, they signed Steve Kerr, they signed Ron Harper, and then, you know, to even add to that team, and then they go 72-10, and they're just a buzzsaw. Nobody was going to beat them. And for Jordan to get all that credit for, you know, like a loaded, loaded team, as we kind of referenced earlier, is just insane. But when you look at then LeBron's path, They didn't make the playoffs his first 2 years, but they doubled their win total in his rookie year just because of him, essentially. They went from 17 to 35 wins. And then in his second year, they were above 500. They were a 42-win team, but still didn't make the playoffs because, again, the East was actually deeper in LeBron's early years than it was in Jordan's early years. And so that first year, you know, even though they were only a 35-win team, they still picked 10th. And so they get Luke Jackson, you know, doesn't really pan out to be anything decent. The following year, they don't have a first-round pick. Then the year after that, they won 50 games. So in LeBron's, just his third year, they really haven't added anybody, and they're a 50-win team now. And so they get Shannon Brown with the 25th pick. But again, like, kind of a decent role player, but not enough to really pan out. And then the following year, again, no first-round pick. And then they pick 19th, and they get J.J. Hickson. Again, like, underrated, or like, you know, underachieving role player, I should say, who most people probably don't even know besides the Cavs fans. And so here you are, like, 6-7 years into LeBron's career, because then they picked 30th the following year, and, you know, you're just not adding any pieces that you need. And so you're 7 years into his career and you haven't really added to the team. The team is winning 66 games because LeBron is that good. You know, Jordan's team is winning 66 games because the team is that good. And I think that's where it's kind of been lost in translation, how bad those Cavs teams were when they were adding, you know, old Antoine Jameson, super old Shaq, just to try and get some veterans in there. But you weren't going to get free agents to Cleveland, and they didn't have the draft capital or any other assets to do anything, so they couldn't build around him, and he had to leave. And so that's why he goes to the Heat, you know, and makes the big three, and then he comes back to the Cavs with their big three, and then eventually to the Lakers to kind of close out his career. You know, I thought it'd only be a couple more years, and here we are, like, in year seven in LA. But to hold that against him, it wasn't his fault that they didn't have the assets. They weren't able to draft these guys and make these trades like the Bulls did. And that's why Jordan didn't have to leave. He had an all-star team around him. You know, LeBron was playing with, you know, Wally Szczerbiak and Larry Hughes, like, and taking them to the finals. So I don't think you can hold that against him, that he had to leave to win a championship. And part of the reason that he had to leave is because of that pressure to win championships that's been put on him by the media, again, devolving all of these conversations. So I don't think you can hold that against him. And then we start talking about awards. You know, overall, they're relatively similar. Jordan has one more MVP. He has the two more finals MVPs just because they've won, even though I think LeBron should have two more finals MVPs, even in those losses. But with both of these guys, you kind of get the fatigue, and we've kind of saw this with, like, Jokic and some other players too, where, like, you don't really just want to keep giving it to them, even though there was probably, you know, like, 8 or 9 years where we knew Jordan was the best player in the league, where you should have just got it, or maybe even more. LeBron, probably like 12, even more years where, like, you know, he's the best player in the league, but you're not going to give it to him every time. So award wise, you know, they kind of balance out, but I don't think you can really lean one way for either guy, just because, again, it's kind of the fatigue, whatever the narratives become in the media, and that's who they go to. And then the next one I want to talk about is, like, the eye test, and really, like, you'll hear a lot about the killer instinct of Michael Jordan here. And this is where I think the marketing has kind of been so good in his favor and has kind of gone rogue and just reached this, like, mythical, you know, point where, you know, he was just, like, the greatest competitor in the world and he was never going to be denied. And, like, well, he was denied a lot early in his career, even with a pretty good team. And then he had to retire twice. So, like, how dedicated really was he? Where, and he couldn't really handle the pressure. I mean, he had to leave twice. So I don't know. I don't buy the killer instinct thing. And to act like LeBron doesn't have it as well. Like, you're starting to hear more and more stories come out with the, you know, players that it's crazy. Like, you know, they came into the league in his prime and now they're already retired and they're starting to come out on these podcasts and tell these stories of him, you know, and how much of a killer he is. He's just maybe not as vocal about it. And then you have to be completely dedicated to the game to play this long and to play at this level for this long. There's no way that basketball isn't just your whole life and the way you're taking care of your body and everything else to sustain a career for 22 years plus now. You have to be insane. And so I don't think you can make the killer instinct point either, even though Jordan might have been a little bit more vocal about it. But anyway, just looking at the eye test too, like, LeBron is literally bigger, stronger, and faster, can jump higher, and is arguably the best basketball mind that we have ever seen in the game. Like, he is an incredible facilitator and passer. He's always in the right spot, making the right play, not just chucking up shots. And when you watch him play, I don't know how, like, if they were playing one-on-one, I think LeBron would win. And I think in any situation, if you had even teams in a five-on-five setting, that he, I don't know how he wouldn't win either there. So That's the eye test and kind of the killer instinct. I think, again, it goes to LeBron. And then just like head to head, looking at the stats and you look at the averages, LeBron obviously averages way more assists and rebounds. And then Jordan obviously gets him in points, but LeBron has just been way more efficient. Like he shoots a better percentage from two, a better percentage from three. I think he's almost 5 percentage points higher in like effective field goal percentage. And, you know, Jordan shot better from the free throw line, but like whatever, it's like 5% or something. But anyway, the one other place that they'll give Jordan a lot of credit is like steals. And even though him and LeBron are like relatively similar, when you look back, this came out like a year ago where they realized that Jordan was getting way more steals at home than on the road. Like he, whoever was keeping the books, they were kind of, it was not totally legit. And nowadays you have kind of like this stat verification because of gambling and everything, where they have to be almost like perfect. But back then it was not like that. And I think there was even a game that came up where Jordan had more steals than the other team had turnovers, which is literally impossible. So they're a little bit disingenuous. Those led to like his defensive player of the year and being considered such a great defender when maybe he didn't really have that many steals. So I think that's kind of a wash. And then when you start to look at the totals are absurd. And this is where some people are starting to make an argument now about like LeBron's longevity and saying he's just a compiler. He's just stat padding. He's a flop or whatever. Like, it's one thing if you're a compiler if you're scoring like 10 points a game over 20 years. But in year 22, he's still averaging 25 points a game. He has averaged 25 points a game every season in his career, which is just elite, especially at 40 years old. And that's not, you're not just compiling. And again, just please watch the games. Like I see so many comments, especially like the old heads, they don't watch the games to say he's just a flopper, he's just a stat padder. He's not, he's out there competing. Like he's not just chucking up shots and he's not getting free throw attempts either, like SGA or Brunson or these other guys. He's getting like maybe 4 or 5 attempts a game and he's just been super efficient. He's shooting like almost 40% from three, I think maybe over 40%, over 50% from two. He's been incredible here. He's not stat padding and he's not just compiling. Like I said, it's compiling if you're just like putting up meddling numbers for a long time. He's putting up elite numbers. Like it's not normal. And so anyway, when you look at the totals, they're insane. I think he has like 41,900 points now. And I think that, yeah, it's almost 10,000 more than Jordan at this point. I don't think people understand how insane that is. Like, to put it in perspective, the two best shooters that we've ever seen play the game, Steph and Klay, if you took both of their career point totals and added them together, they would still need 596 points to match LeBron. Like, the two best shooters we have ever seen, they still don't even match LeBron. It's absurd. And then when you add his playoff points, he has over 50,000 total, as we know, because he just passed it recently. And to put that in perspective, the difference between LeBron and Jordan in total points, counting regular season and playoffs, is the difference between them is larger between the career total points of Trae Young. Like Trae Young's entire career on top of Michael Jordan does not touch LeBron, which is just like, it's mind blowing. And I don't think people understand how far I think he is setting the bar ahead of everyone else. Like, not only do I think this is not a debate, I don't think it's close. And so we're just at this point, like LeBron, he's the more efficient scorer. And then you start to look at assists too. Like he's fourth all time in assists. So he's only behind, I think, Stockton, Chris Paul, and Jason Kidd at this point. And so not only is he like by far the NBA's all-time leading scorer, he's the one of the best facilitators that we've ever seen. And like I said, his basketball IQ and everything, he's just between that being the more efficient scorer, the better rebounder, he's a more versatile defender. He can guard all five positions, anyone on the floor at any time. He did it the other night to Cat. He had Cat in hell all night. And Cat's like, what, 7 feet, 6'11"? I mean, I don't even know. But yeah, I mean, it's just... It's incredible what he's doing even at this age. And then on top of it, when you look at some of the other intangibles, like we've never put as much pressure on a player as we did on teenage LeBron, and no one has ever had higher expectations. And not only did he meet them, he has exceeded them. And he's done it in an era, you know, of social media and all this added pressure that wasn't there before. Like, Jordan had to retire twice because of the pressure. It was very well documented if you watch The Last Dance. Could not handle it. Had to go play baseball. It was so in his head. LeBron has dealt with, you know, more expectations, more pressure than anybody, and has done it for 22 years without a hitch. And I think that's just a testament to his killer instinct and how good he is, and why I think he is truly the GOAT. And that's why I don't think it's close. So anyway, I know this was a little bit longer winded than usual, but with that, we'll just about wrap it up for this episode of the Daily Dime. As always, thank you for listening. And if you are on the podcast version, go ahead and rate us 5 stars. Please consider following the show. And if you're listening on YouTube, please give us a subscribe and a like, and we will talk to you next week. See ya.